Brad, he's in our Touchpoints Rehab interview chair. Always great to see Len Bestoff, NBC Connecticut Troubleshooters Chief Investigative Reporter. Good morning, Len.
Good morning. Good morning. You're a regular now.
And I'm made in America, too. All right. That's what I want to hear.
Well, you know, you worked on a very interesting story that was covered last night. Firefighters battling fires and serious mental health challenges. And I never realized just how serious this situation is until your report was released. Talk about that.
Unreal. Well, thank you. Thank you for watching it. And thank you, everybody at home who watched it either, you know, on our air or online. And it was one of those stories where, you know, you think of firefighters, police, EMS. These are the finest and the bravest, you know, our finest people who go into buildings and go into situations when we're all running out. And we just think they're fine. You know, they're tough. They can handle this. And by they do. But sometimes you never know what it is. And it was fascinating talking with all these different people in terms of what things did at some point linger. What they talk about all the time, and I didn't get to talk about in the piece, but we're talking about on the Talk of Connecticut here, is they all have a bucket of things that just bother them. And some people have a bucket the size of your coffee cup. Some people have a bucket the size of a mop bucket that they can take all this in. But eventually what happens is that bucket gets full. And how are you going to deal with that? And that's what we talked about in the story.
You know, when you think of firefighters, I remember firefighters, police, firefighters are this, but the courage that these folks have, I mean, you say, how do they do it? And you never think of what you're talking about. But that's one of the problems, and I think this is the reason that your particular investigative report went over so big.
Now, I think you're right, and thank you. One of the things that was key to this story is NBC Connecticut is owned by NBC, and they own about 12 to 13 affiliates or local news operations across the country. And what we did was we took the power of all of those stations, and we surveyed 7,000 firefighters across the United States in conjunction with the International Association of Firefighters. That also included first responders, EMTs, paramedics, things like that as well. And so you got this large amount of people, and then we got all this data from them talking about how so many of them, like 95%, say they've had traumatic events. 80% of them say that they've had some kind of post-traumatic stress related to this. And when you see these numbers and you see them from all over the country, you have to say, wow, this is really something. There's something here.
Glenn, explain, because the piece brings this out, and I would have never thought about this. There was one responder, for example, one firefighter who said when he detects a certain scent, it reminds of him something. When another firefighter said he saw the certain color of a book bag, it reminded him of something. Talk about that.
It's in those two cases. In the one case, the scent was the smell of antifreeze because he had gone to so many traffic accidents. And, you know, one that rung in his head was one that it was four teenagers that were all killed in a car wreck. And
wow.
So you think about that, and we think about the video we see on TV, and frankly, and no offense to TV or whomever, but it's sanitized because you're not hearing and seeing a lot of the things that we, for good reason, don't show. These firefighters, police, and EMS, they're seeing that. They're hearing that. They're smelling that. They're dealing with all these things, and we don't think about it. I don't think about it. Certainly, I have a lot more of a close set of attention to this now after talking with all these folks. When it comes to the colors, this was a firefighter who was at that horrible fire in Stamford back about 7 years ago, 6 years ago.
I remember that.
It was awful.
Big one.
Yes, yes. Three children died.
Yep.
Two grandparents died. And this firefighter was helping recover the bodies, and he helped recover two of them. And one of the victims was a child and had this pinkish white color on her. And then he said, whenever he'd drop off his kids at school, he'd see dozens of little girls with these pink white backpacks, and that triggered him. What was also incredible was every single firefighter or first responder I spoke with, the date was always in their head of the most traumatic incident. They could say it was June 7th, 2014. I remember that. I mean, it's burned into their head.
Wow.
So you can tell that it's something that somehow, for some reason, upset them, registered with them. And a lot of things, frankly, that they told me I can't say on the radio because it's very upsetting.
Are these responders seeking treatment? Is there help for these responders?
That's a tough question. I think that some of them want treatment. Some of them aren't sure if they want treatment. A lot of them say that some things haven't worked. For example, there's what's called EAP, or Employee Assistance Programs. And those are good, and most municipalities or states or federal government operations offer these. But what the firefighters and the first responders are telling us is it's sort of a one-size-fits-all. You could be somebody at work who's dealing with alcoholism, or somebody, let's say, a sales manager who's dealing with depression. And a firefighter or a first responder or a police officer is going to tell you, that just doesn't work for me because I'm dealing with stuff that was much more traumatic, not in any way to, you know, minimize what these other people are dealing with.
You know what I've always wanted to ask you, because you have worked with firefighters and all these particular stories. Why is it that in one family there's a firefighter, in the same family there's another one as he grows up? And there's a whole group that become firefighters. Knowing this, they still want to be firefighters.
Well, it's one part of the job, certainly. But there's a lot of other great things about being a firefighter. And I think what you see with so many of these people, whether it's police, fire, EMS, is they're so driven to serve the public. For example, I coach soccer. And one of my players for years, her father is a firefighter. Her mother is an EMT, or was an EMT, and you could even see it in her that she is so driven to help. She got hurt in soccer and couldn't play anymore, but she wanted to be on the sidelines and be the team manager. So it's literally in the DNA.
I was just going to say it is in that DNA, isn't it?
It's in the person's makeup.
It's
incredible how these people are put together.
Yes, but I want to get back to what we're talking about, that these folks, they're not always aware, but sometimes they're aware of the help. Besides EAP, which they're not real keen on, a big thing in the last 20 years has been what's called CISD, which stands for Critical Incident Stress Debriefing. And so they have a horrible incident. Let's say four people die in a car wreck. The next day or two or three, they'll bring in a team and they'll talk about it. And what firefighters and EMTs, first responders, are telling us is that that's about effective maybe 40-50% of the time. The thing that they said works the best is peer-to-peer, where you're a firefighter, I'm a firefighter. Hey, Brad, let's talk. Are you okay? Do you want to talk about what happened, you know, last week when you and I were on that call where that person was eviscerated in a car wreck or something? That seems to work. The problem is, while an overwhelming majority of first responders say that works, only about a third have done it because there's a stigma.
Okay, I was going to ask.
That's the other thing.
Stigma,
yeah. Is the survey results are showing that an overwhelming majority of first responders in Connecticut, we had 124 people in Connecticut participate in this survey, and they reflected the national data, almost a mirror of the national data. And one of the things they said was that, you know, I'm worried that people are going to think I'm weak or unfit for duty. I'm worried that it's going to jeopardize my job. Mm-hmm. And we all know how precious jobs are in Connecticut.
Do we know why peer-to-peer seems to work better than debriefing?
When I've talked to firefighters and first responders about this, they're telling me that these people know what I've been through. They've seen exactly what I've seen.
Well, who's doing the debriefing?
The debriefings are done by the same kinds of folks.
Okay.
But the thing is that debriefings are done in the days or weeks afterwards. And we interviewed a fantastic fire chief in Manchester, David Billings, who's also president of the Career Fire Chiefs Association in Connecticut. And what he said is that CISD, these critical incident stress debriefings, are helpful, but sometimes, based on the timing, it's like having that Band-Aid and ripping it off. Yeah. You've started to heal, and then, you know, you pull the scab off the wound. And so peer-to-peer is a little bit more slower paced. It's at your pace when you're ready to do it. It's not, okay, guys, we're going to all go to the station house and talk about that event from a day or a few weeks ago.
You know, it's amazing. It's amazing when you put these programs together, but people are seeing many for the first time what a firefighter truly, truly goes through. And it's a tremendous job that I think to do these kinds of reports for all of us.
Well, you go to work every day as a first responder with your life on the line, don't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They do. I mean, they don't, just like, you know, in our world, we don't know what we're going to do every day.
Right.
They really don't know what they're going to do every day.
That's stress in itself when you think about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, in this day and age, you know, you worry.
Oh.
I was talking to some firefighters recently that they're now having to participate in active shooter drills.
Wow.
Because, you know, we've talked about this.
Right.
You know, the police come in, they're armed. Okay, you got firefighters and EMTs coming in who are not.
They're not.
And they are just as much a target as everyone else.
And so are teachers.
Absolutely. I heard y'all talking about that this morning. I've heard you talk about it many times before.
Yeah.
So, they don't know what they're getting into every day. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, it's getting the awareness out there. One of the things I thought, one of the best quotes in the story was a Colchester volunteer firefighter who talked about how there are many fire departments where not even once a year they will talk about mental health services. And he said, you've got to do it at least once or twice a year. And it may not be a full day of training because that can get expensive. It may not even be a half day of training.
Right.
But it's something where you need to get folks together talking about it.
Okay. Can you stick around to the top of the hour?
Absolutely. Whatever
Great.
Y'all want.
Terrific.
All right.
Because there's some other stories that the troubleshooters are working on. I want to delve into one and also get back to this very important story as far as our firefighters are concerned. The story just broke. What's the reaction been? Have you gotten any on this particular story?
Mostly positive. There have been a few, as one of the firefighters we talked with, keyboard commandos who were sort of saying, this is what you signed up for. And that's certainly an attitude that is pervasive.
Mm-hmm.
In the fire service to a degree, but I think it's slowly ebbing.
Okay.
Really?
Well, it goes back to that stigma you were talking
slowly
about before.
Slowly ebbing.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay, we're coming up to a break time, and then we'll be back with our very special guest, who, by the way, is a regular now. Yes, does a great job with Channel 30 investigative reporting.
And Brad Len best off with us. A few minutes more with Len, investigative reporter, NBC Connecticut Troubleshooters. What can we do in order to help the first responders, the firefighters, in the way of preparation before going into one of these events, although many of these events are unpredictable?
That's one of the questions that's being asked. And I was talking before about Manchester Fire Chief Dave Billings, who's also president of the Career Fire Chiefs Association in Connecticut. One of the things he studied at the National Fire Academy was something called resiliency training. We were just talking about it earlier during the break, Brad and I. This is something they do in the military.
Absolutely. Did it Marine Corps.
And can tell us a little bit about that so folks understand. I mean, essentially, it's getting you...
They prepare you in your training. You get prepared for what if this happens. They'll put up a story that it's actually going to happen. And the way they give it to you and train you, because you're in classes for a while, you're out in the field, that you will, it just stays with you. It's hard to explain, but it stays with you.
But they say you're going to have an event like this happen.
They'll say, you're going to have an event like this. This could happen to you. Yep, absolutely.
I know one of the things that Chief Billings talked about, and this may be a more modern end of it.
He was in the Marine Corps?
I don't know that, but I know he studied it because the military's been doing this for years, and they're looking at doing this with firefighters and first responders, is, okay, you're going to have an incident like this at some point. At this juncture, identify who the peers are that you can talk with about that. It's not going to eliminate the post-traumatic stress, depression, anxiety, but what it may do is lessen the impact of it. And I think that's a fascinating part of this because, look, we're in Connecticut. We have no money. So you have to figure out ways to do these things that aren't going to be just a ridiculous drain on our cash, which we don't have.
Right.
But you know something? This whole firefighting, this is a story, and you've covered it. I mean, it's unbelievable. That's the first time that Dan was, you were really impressed.
Yeah. Now, couple other things. I know you had a story on the disrepair of our bridges, our infrastructure. What can you tell us quickly about that?
Well, I'm going to tell you this for starters. Great job by our team there, Shung Puri, the reporter, and Garrett Allison, the photographer, and a whole bunch of other folks, our producer, Matthew Glasser. But to me, the most striking thing with that story, and I hope you watched it and didn't just read it, because if you haven't, you need to, was the use of our drone ranger. We got underneath these bridges in ways that Garrett, our photographer, told us there is no way he could have done, where you literally could see the gaps. I mean, holes. You're seeing daylight through bridges. That blew me away.
Wow. Whoa. What bridges? Let me write it down.
Too many to mention.
Wow, my God.
I think there are 32 bridges.
Well, I think the viaduct was one of them over here, I-84.
Yes. Yes, was part of it. And I know they were underneath that. They were underneath the I-95 bridge in West Haven. They were underneath what I believe is, this is dating myself, but they call it the Devon Bridge, the Route 1 bridge between Stratford and Milford.
Right.
Which back in the early 90s, I covered it. It was always getting stuck. It's one of those bridges that goes up.
Right.
But I guess that one had 100% disrepair, according
to... Give us a little tease. Jill Konopka working on a story. Tell us about that.
I can give you a very little tease.
Okay.
Jill's working on a great story that we've been doing in conjunction with our sister station in New York, WNBC. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be talking about safety for your kids, and it's something that we all deal with all the time in terms of a recreational activity. You're going to want to see it because it's going to blow you away.
We're out of time. Len, always a pleasure. Thank
you
so much.
Good to have you as a regular on our program.
I live right across the river. Call me anytime.
Thank
you.